Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women Oral History 2. Gertrude Silverblatt and Bessie Hyman are interviewing Silas Adelsheim on November 1, 1975. Mr. Adelsheim is being interviewed in the den of his apartment at University Square, number 1. Mr. Adelsheim, first tell me about the date of your birth and something about your immediate family.
I was born near the end of the 19th century, November 22nd, 1899. On Fremont Street in the north side Allegheny. The street is no more as it's part of Route 19 going north. And with my mother and father, we lived on Fleming Avenue in the north side until about 1906 or 7 when many Jewish families migrated from the north side of Pittsburgh to East End. First, however, I'd like to say something about my parents and my grandparents. As I grew older, I was very much interested in my ancestries because I seemed to come from so many different countries. My mother's mother came from Berlin, Germany. Her name was Caroline Wasserman, and she came over 1965 to Richmond, Virginia to be with her uncle, Charles Held. She did very well because between 1965 and 1967 she met my grandfather, Louis Rosenthal, whose family came from Central Ohio. He personally came from Mount Vernon, Ohio, and I don't know how they met, but they were married in 1967 in Richmond, Virginia, and we have their marriage certificate to prove it.
It wasn't 1867.
Oh, excuse me. You're right. It's 1867. That was correct, Bessie. My paternal grandparents was Sarah Strauss of Philadelphia, and her husband was Jacques, J-A-C-Q-U-E, Adelsheimer in those days. And I was always told that he came from Alsace-Lorraine, that part of Germany that was sometimes held by the Germans and sometimes by the French. And he settled in Philadelphia. And I don't know when they were married, but I never knew Sarah Strauss Adelsheimer. She passed away before I was born. But the family seemed to migrate west from Philadelphia. I was very thrilled when in 1958, on a trip to Europe with Peggy, my wife, and my sister and brother-in-law, Ruth and Leon Epstein, we had always been told there was a town called Adelsheim, supposedly, as my aunt translated, the home of the eagle. And when in Wiesbaden, I asked the concierge about the town to see where if he could find it. He came back and told me that he couldn't find E-D-E-L-S-H-A-M, but he found Adelsheim, A-D-E-L-S-H-A-M. And it was located very near. It was right between Frankfurt and Heidelberg. So on the rest of our tour, we went to this town and tried to find some birth records. There was a small castle where some nobility by that name lived, and I tried to find out what I could, how my grandfather got that name. And our guide was pretty smart. He said, "Why do you call people that come from Pittsburgh, they're Pittsburghers. You come from New York, they're New Yorkers." He said, "When they must have migrated out of this country from Adelsheim, they became Adelsheimers." And I had to accept that because there were no actual birth records. It was a nice little town. It just had one industry. I think it was a forge factory. But it was a good place for asthmatic conditions, hay fever and things like that, which is interesting to me.
And what about your parents, your mother and
father? My father, Simon Adelsheim, was born in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And my mother, Stella Rosenthal, was born in Johnstown, PA. They were both, first I think I should say that according to Chester Bannerman, the executive secretary of Rhoda Sholem Temple, told me that my grandfather, Jacques Adelsheim, was one of the original members of the Rhoda Sholem congregation when it was formed. I don't know when that was, 120 years ago. I know that next 1976 we'll be celebrating the 120th anniversary of the Rhoda Sholem.
Was your mother's name Stella Rosenthal?
Rosenthal, with two L's. And we have a rabbi, Billy Rosenthal, who's part of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations now.
When was your father born?
April 30th. I don't know the year, but the birthday was April 30th.
And your mother?
And my mother was July 7th. I don't know her year of birthday. I'm not sure, but I just don't. They were married in 1899, and I was born at the end of that year. And from what I was told of my childhood, oh, I wanted to get back about their being, my grandfather being a member of Rhoda Sholem Congregation, which information I got from Chester Bannerman, who many people will remember. But we had another close connection to the congregation. Bernard Callaman was executive secretary prior to the time that Chester Bannerman became secretary. And Bernard Callaman was married to a Bickert, B-I-C-K-E-R-T. They were the parents of Dr. Bernard Callaman today. And the Bickerts were in our family because my Aunt Lolly Adelsheim had married Isidore Bickert, and they had a big family.
Did you have any sisters or brothers?
I'm an only child. But it happens, it's quite a coincidence that both the Adelsheims and the Rosenthals had six children. There were four boys and two girls. So I had many, many uncles. Both my mother and my aunt on the Rosenthal side were very close. And so were Sarah Bickert's mother, Lolly, and her older sister, Gertrude, were very close.
What do you remember about your home?
Well, I was a sick kid. I think I had pneumonia several times in my early youth. And I remember starting religious school about my home, Bessie. I think we lived in an apartment on Fleming Avenue on the north side till we moved to East Liberty. And as I think I mentioned, most of the Jewish people who lived in Allegheny at that time migrated to East End because the wonderful foresight of the board of directors at Rhoda Sholem Temple selected that site of Fifth Avenue and Morwood.
When you were...
I think that brought most of the Jews to the East Liberty, Oakland, Squirrel Hill site.
Being an only child, were you indulged a great deal?
I don't think so. We seen Sarah Bickert, my first cousin, a few years younger than I am, and And then there were the Biggards, B-I-G-G-A-R-D, Florin and Ben Biggard. They were the parents of Larry and Bert Biggard. Helen Sanger is her married name, and Claire Lichtenstuhl. And then on the other side, Ed Biggard and his wife, they had two boys, Sanford and Leonard. And it seems that we all sort of got together. Peggy reminded me that when there was, a great, Friday was the big day for family baking, schnecking, cinnamon bread, and things like that. And they used to compare their baking. This group did many, many things together. Primarily, I remember that the parents, the mothers, all went to Saturday morning services at Brother Shalom Temple. And we joined them. I think the hours for the religious school must be different, must have been different than they are today, because I remember all of us coming in to join our mothers at Temple. And then it was a big thing. We had lunch somewhere. I think it was at this drugstore right now that's still at the corner of Neville Street and Fifth Avenue. It was just a sandwich. It was to tide us over until we went back to Temple in the afternoon for movies and dancing school.
When you say we, do you mean the young people or your parents also?
They would go back too and stay with us during that time, and it was a great social event for the parents to entertain everybody until it was your turn to go to dancing school. And you may have heard the name of Mrs. Cartwright, who was our dancing teacher.
Your parents stayed with you and between
down in,
Temple?
Down in the assembly room where the movies were being shown. And I guess sometimes they came up to watch the dancing class. But that was one thing that tied us so closely to Rhoda Shaw.
But did it tie you to your parents?
I think it did. We felt, you know, that they were interested in what we were doing. And there were many other things. At the same time, the Falk Memorial Building was built, which included the gym and the swimming pool. And as a boy, I recall very distinctly going to the temple every Tuesday and Thursday afternoons after school, after high school, where we participated in basketball and other games in the gym and then in swimming. And we had a swimming team. I was lucky enough to be able to plunge a little bit because I was pretty heavy and floated well, and that was an event that required being able to hold your breath underwater for a minute and see how far you could plunge off a board that was higher than the side, the end of the pool.
With most of the cultural life in your home of a Jewish nature?
Yes, without being deeply religious. I don't recall that we had Friday evening services. In fact, I don't think we did. But my parents were always interested in temple and temple activities.
How affluent were your parents?
I don't think they were affluent at all. My father, from a young man, worked for Kaufman's department store. He started as a salesman, and when he retired by 1947, he was then a supply buyer and treasurer of the company, which was just a title to sign checks. And I know that in my teens, I worked every Saturday at different places. I think I started out selling hats for Trulia Warner Hat Store on Fifth Avenue.
How old were you then?
probably 16, 17. And then Dad got me a job in Kaufman's. I was a stock boy in the men's clothing. Then I got promoted to selling overalls and trousers in the pants department.
Was this while you were going to school?
Yes, while I was going to school, and also when I was working after school. I still worked on Saturdays. I think I needed it. I needed it to keep up with my friends, because most of them, their families were more affluent than mine. And my parents couldn't afford to give me a lot of spending money. But I was willing to work. I never seemed to mind it. It helped.
Tell me what you remember about Pittsburgh when you were growing up, how it's different then from what it is today.
Well, we very rarely participated in civic affairs. I mean, such as either the Chamber or Congress or the Symphony or things like that. But we did participate actively in congregation affairs, whatever there were, plays and socials and seminars and things like that. I think that's what created my great interest in the Brotherhood movement, because I don't say I was irreligious, but in my early 20s, I didn't go to temple like I did when I was younger. They started the Sunday sermons, and that was interesting. When Dr. Freehoff gave them, before that, when I was confirmed in 1915 by Dr. J. Leonard Levy, who was a wonderful speaker. But I don't think they had any Sunday sermons, just Saturday morning services.
But do you think life today is very different from the way it was then?
Oh, much.
In what way?
Well, I think the children don't have the respect for anything, not just parents, but laws or anything else. And I think that's one of the problems, the great problems we have today. Trying to do something to get everybody to appreciate law and order. I know you hear a lot about it in the more criminal existence, but it's much more than that. I think it happens with the young people.
You
hear the vandalism right in our own churches and schools.
You spoke about your religious education, going to Road of Shulam. Did you have any other religious education besides what you received?
My father, my mother and father were confirmed at Road of Shulam, the old HB Temple. And I was confirmed. And my two sons were confirmed there. And we have fifth generation. Last May 3rd, 1975, was the fifth generation. Now, in my day, we were so reformed, we had no such thing as bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. It didn't have too much Jewish content. You didn't learn Hebrew or anything like that.
No, I'm sorry. We never were taught. We had no Hebrew in our curriculum. And I feel badly that I don't know any. And at home, my folks all spoke English. Occasionally, when my grandmother, Caroline Wasserman Roosevelt, came to visit us, my parents spoke German with her. But that wasn't frequent.
When
I was so dumb in language, it took me a year and a half to graduate a year in German in Peabody High School.
Where did you go to primary school?
When we moved to East End, we lived on Mountain Street. I went to elementary school at Fulton School, all through there. I think I started in the first grade, and then I went to Peabody High School. I graduated in 1918 and immediately got a job with Westinghouse Electric at East Pittsburgh. That was the tail end of the war. Of course, we didn't know it at that time. But my parents could not afford to send me to college. And I don't think I was very much interested in learning Talmud.
Do you remember anything about your teachers or the classroom discipline at that time?
I remember Virginia Yamens, Y-A-M-E-N-S, expressional English teacher at Peabody High School, was wonderful. In fact, I believe after we were married, I took Peggy to meet her. She was a very old person, it seemed to me at that time.
In what way was she wonderful?
Well, she was such a wonderful teacher and so warm. She had been an actress in her early days, and she really taught us expressional English with a lot of warmth and sincerity that, I never had any other expressional English teacher, but she was just so wonderful. She seemed like a mother more than a teacher.
Do you remember any classroom discipline when you were growing up?
Didn't seem to have many problems in discipline in high school or in elementary school. I don't remember anything very strict. Those days the kids didn't smoke and they didn't drink.
Did you have many friends when you went to school?
I always had a gang. We had a teenage club called the Solid Gallum, S-A-G-E-L-M. It was made up by the last names of the original members. And we had dances, we had parties, it was all good, clean fun. I don't think there was even any necking. We danced, we had picnics, hay rides and things like that, and I always seemed to be in the midst of some kind of a club. And you might remember that towards the end of Dr. Fiala's life, he formed the Black and White Club. That was to try to teach all the boys who were members eligible the Black and White Club.
Was that Dr. Levy? Was that Dr. Levy?
Dr. Levy, yeah, right. I'm glad you corrected that. I'm trying to think so far back. It was Levy. And it was to try to keep the boys straight. And it was interesting. That was culture. Anyway, when I finished high school, I said it was towards the last year of the war. And I remember one thing that sticks in my mind. My father and I both went down to register for the draft in 1918. I was at the young end of it, and he was at the older end of it. And I was offered this job out of Weston House through a friend of mine, Herbie Grossman and Willie Arbaugh, both boys got there. And they paid a lot of money in those days. Help was hard to get. And I became a clerk in the production department, where they made these big circuit breakers and generators. And I was lucky. I was advanced to different departments, but I finally wound up in the switchboard sales department, which was right, less than 100 feet from where station KBKA, the radio station, was originated.
Did they take your father?
Beg your pardon?
Did they take your father?
No. The war ended in November of 1918. November 11th, you may remember then, was then the original.
You said that you were a sickly child.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me more about the medical care that you had and the services that you could get when you were sick as a child?
I don't remember. I was 5, 6, 7, something like when I had pneumonia. I only remember, and I've thought about this often, when you hear the kids with high five and things like that. I remember my father bought me a phonograph. You may have seen the advertisement with Ron Records and a big horn and a dog sitting there looking in the horn. Well, that type of machine that they bought for me. And it was wonderful because you could play these records, I could reach out and play the records. But I survived pneumonia to develop and rose fever and asthma, and my dad had hay fever and asthma, which finally resulted in my folks buying some property in Canada and building a cottage there in 1924.
What did you do when you were sick, or your parents? Did they call doctors? Did you go to a hospital?
No, I never went to a hospital until many years later. They had the doctor come. I guess they didn't have the medication that they had today, but anyway, whatever they did help me, and I got over it. And,
was it always the same doctor?
Yes. Werner Kalman graduated medicine, then he became our family doctor. But I want to get back to this Westinghouse and being close to KDKA. We didn't realize. We used to take our lunch and go in there and eat and listen to them play records and make announcements. We didn't realize what an impact that first radio station was making, it would make all over the world. And I was in the switchboard sales department, and our engineers worked up a kit for the employees where you could build your own radio. And you had earphones, and you had a little thing that you had to fool around with to try and get the station. And everybody was building them. Only the employees could get this for originally. My dad and I built a set, and it was a terrific thing to put on a pair of headphones and hear music from East Pittsburgh.
Was this 1918 or a little later?
That was in about 1920, because I left there in 1922 and got a job as a bookkeeper with the Williams Ansel Company. I knew nothing much about bookkeeping except what I had learned at high school taking a business course. But they wanted a bookkeeper, and it was a new organization, and the Williams of the firm was Jake Williams, the J. Williams Company, Leroy Williams' father. And it seems now, as I look back at it, my life is all centered around 7th, 8th, and 9th Street in downtown Pittsburgh.
I'd like to know a little bit more about the headphone radios that you built. You said that they gave kits to their employees.
No, they didn't give them. They sold them. You could buy them at the company store, the parts.
Did other people who didn't work for Westinghouse, did they buy kits? And
I don't think they were permitted to later, because it was a very new, scarce thing. And this was a gimmick to interest the employees in making their own radio.
They were called crystal sets.
That's exactly it. I couldn't think of the name. Do you remember, Kurt? You fooled around
with
a little
father.
Needle to get the...
I remember my father fooling around with his
right.
needle.
Before you talked about most of the fun that you had around the temple and with gangs, is there anything more that you'd like to add about your recreation while you were an adolescent?
Well, I was always interested in athletics. I was captain of the Peabody High School swimming team in my senior year. We had no pool, but we practiced down at the YMCA in East Liberty. And Tree's gym up at Pitt, and that was quite exciting. I don't remember too well how we did, but it was competitive, and Peabody did that, I guess, average as well. And I always loved to dance. In those days, they had dances at the Fort Pitt Hotel, mostly weekends, Friday and Saturday night. Occasionally the William Penn had big bands. And our gang, our crowd, our club, we always had two, three couples who went dancing Friday, Saturday nights. And then there was Saunders in the Rittenhouse in East Liberty. And out at Fox Chapel, Saunders had a place. And there was the Willows at Oakmont. It was very, very popular in those days. And that was our sport.
When you had a date with them, you asked the girls for the date? Did you, or oh, gangs get together?
No, everybody thought it was going with somebody else. More or less regularly. If she was a good dancer, that's all.